Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, William English. Resonance is also on www.resonancefm.com. And today's guest is Paul Martin. Thank you very much for coming in, Paul. And your task today is to introduce a recording with which you have a particular connection by a Chinese artist, I think.
A Chinese artist called Li Huanqia.
Li Huanqia.
Yes.
Okay. And all I know about him is that he was associated with the Signals Gallery, I think, in the early 1960s.
That's right. Yes.
Which specialised in sort of kinetic art.
Yes. Yes.
There was a magazine called Signals Bulletin, which ran to about eight issues.
Yes.
But this particular recording has only just it doesn't exist as an issued CD or anything.
It's,
what's the story? What was
the history
of this?
I think it's just a home recording he made he made reliefs which had clocks in them.
Mm-hmm.
He was famous when he showed at the Signals Gallery. He showed white reliefs, and then I need to explain a bit of his history. And then the Signals Gallery closed, and Dave Madala, who was one of the people at Signals, recommended him to the Listen Gallery. So he showed at the Listen Gallery, and he had two or three exhibitions at the Listen Gallery. And one of the things the Listen Gallery did was make multiples.
Hmm.
And so multiples were made, which were metal sheets with magnetic points. His work was hung on the wall, metal that hung on the wall, and they had magnetic points, circular points, which you moved around at will.
So did they invite sort of participation
did,
in
yes.
some way? The viewer was supposed to move these things around on the surface.
Yes, and they were like mass made, and they cost £9 each.
Oh, really?
In the late 60s.
Right.
They were made, yes.
Oh, I see, so they weren't unique pieces.
No, they weren't.
What sort of edition size? Any idea?
I think they were probably unlimited.
Oh, right.
I think, like, just as many were made as people asked for.
Yeah. And other people associated with the gallery would have been sort of Lillian Line and I think the Greek sculptor Takis.
That's right, yes.
And the emphasis, it was always on, was it sort of always movement and sort of magnetic items?
Right, yes.
And
yes.
But was there a sound element usually or not?
I don't think there was, no.
No.
There was a South American, several South American artists as well.
Yes, I think
like
it was
like Camargo.
Right.
Whose work wasn't kinetic but reliefs.
Right. Right.
So,
So what was your first connection with Li Huanqia?
I think I did meet him originally at the Signals Gallery, and my impression was that he was one of the artists there, but he was the one. You'd sort of go there and you'd be talking to the directors, and Li'd be sort of scooting around doing all the carpentry and the hard work, you know.
Right. Right. And then he eventually moved to Cumbria, didn't
yes,
he?
Yes, I think he... So he had two or three shows at Listen Gallery, and I think then he got disillusioned with the London art scene.
Hmm.
And Nick Sawyer, who lived in Cumbria, who was a carpenter who helped make the reliefs, invited him up to Cumbria for the weekend. And so Li went up as well and sort of fell in love with Cumbria and moved up there.
Is this the Lake District?
And so he... In the northwest... northeast corner of Cumbria, so so near Carlisle, northeast of Carlisle.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So
it's quite an obscure sort of choice for an artist. I mean, he obviously wasn't a careerist as such.
No. I think he just wanted to be in an environment where he could work, and that's what he found when he was there.
Right.
Yes.
And you were saying something about the LYC? Was this his own gallery? Or?
So he moved up there, and it was very close. Where he was very close to Hadrian's Wall.
Oh, right.
And Winifred Nicholson lived on Hadrian's Wall, who was married to Ben Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
And they both lived on Hadrian's Wall. Then they separated. And Winifred Nicholson had a farmhouse on Hadrian's Wall and some farmhouse buildings further down, and she sold one of the farmhouses to Lee. I don't know whether it's possible that she said, "Oh, why don't you open a museum, an art gallery?"
Hmm.
So he bought the farm buildings and he turned them into an art gallery museum.
Right, right. And actually on Hadrian's Wall?
Actually on the front garden, beneath the front garden was Hadrian's Wall.
Right, right.
So Hadrian's Wall, that bit was some sections were viewable and some weren't. So his was like, he was actually on the wall, but the wall beat the foundations, they'd be under his garden.
Right. Did he only exhibit his own works? Or?
So he started up museum. He had like Roman relics in the museum, and so he called it museum. But he gave, his idea was he for 10 years he would have an art gallery, and he would invite artists to exhibit. And I think he wanted probably more than actually happened. He wanted artists to go up and work there.
Hmm.
There was enough space. It was the farmhouse was quite big. There was enough space for people to work, people to stay.
Right, right.
And so he gave exhibitions, yes. Mm. He invited artists to exhibit.
Right.
As well
right.
as showing his own work. It took like second fiddle. But he did, at least once, he had a show of his own work there.
Right, right. And how did this piece come about, the piece that we're going to listen to later?
So he did. So he decided to keep the museum going for 10 years, and then, I think he actually closed after 12 years. And so he did his own work, and which was a relief work, and he got into clock mechanisms.
Oh right.
He'd go into Carlisle and buy up old clocks,
uh-huh.
And so he'd get clock mechanisms and take them apart, and so behind. So some of the reliefs he made, he got his sort of making toy art.
Oh, right.
Which didn't literally mean toy. It was more, it just meant something you could play with. It could be art, like art for everyone. And so he incorporated these mechanisms into his reliefs. And the mechanisms, so he had clock mechanisms, and they were clockwork.
Mm.
I don't. There were any pendulums at all, and they would chime every quarter of an hour.
Right.
And I think in each relief he'd have possibly even two clocks, and so he had. So in his studio he had a number of reliefs. I'm just sort of imagining what he did, and then he decided to record them. He just got his cassette recorder and stuck a microphone up.
Right.
So they are like, they're his home recordings.
Right. And how many, I think, did you say he made two of these? Were there two sort of...
I think it's a number one symphony and a number two symphony, as far as I know.
Okay. And were they designed as symphonies? Was it his intention to release them as musical pieces, or were they really part of an installation?
I think he just, I don't think he intended to release them, no. Mm. They're just part of an installation.
Right. Yeah. And is the one we're going to listen to this afternoon is what, Toy Symphony Number 1?
Yes.
Is that right?
It's Time Toy Number 1 Symphony.
Time Toy
yes.
Number 1 Symphony.
Yes. Yes.
And that lasts 45 minutes.
Yes, it's just the length of the side of a cassette.
Oh, right.
So, the cassette's got two sides, so it's just so just recorded one side and then recorded the other.
Right, right. So the duration is fairly sort of is determined really by this the length of the cassette, but I suppose in the gallery it would have just gone on endlessly.
Yeah, the symphony,
right.
Intents and purposes is endless. Yes.
So tell me how you came across this the cassette.
The Nick Sawyer who introduced Lee to Cumbria, Lee died in 1994, and Nick Sawyer is one of the trustees, and he had this recording. He's looked after all the work, and the archive is now in Manchester. So I think the original recording is in Manchester, but when he's looking after it, he made a copy of it.
Right.
So it's from him.
Okay.
Yes.
And this has recently been transferred to CD?
Yeah, a couple of days ago, yes.
Oh, right.
Yes.
And is any intention to release it, have it on? You know, will people be able to get hold of it? Or is it?
I don't think because it's a home recording. I think it should just stay as that. But I think
right.
I think it would be nice in the future if, like, next time Zen has an exhibition with these reliefs, that someone could record them and bring them on CD. I think it would be. It's interesting when artists have many, like Kurt Schwitters, who lived in the late. He's got like many dimensions. He's right. Sound as well as visual, and it's interesting when artists work in different areas, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And you were instrumental, I think, in some part of a show at the Hayward in 1989.
It was an exhibition of The Other Story,
uh-huh.
and at the Hayward Gallery, and the idea of it was just to say that in Britain there's another story to art, you know. There's like the received wisdom of art history, you know, like the pop artists and
right.
Rashid Irene, who curated it, he was saying like there are all these other artists, mostly who have not been recognised, and mm-hmm. Lee was one of the artists, and he stayed with me and I helped him hang his work.
Right. So, and were you sort of on the curator of that show?
I was just a friend. You know?
You're a friend, so you're doing this as a friend in a sense.
Yes, it's nice to have friends, isn't it? When you're hanging a show, the more help you can get, the better.
Yeah. All right. Well, shall we just play this piece then? I think so. It's 45 minutes long. This is by you better tell me the name again, because I'm probably going to pronounce
Li Huanqia.
Li Huanqia.
Li Huanqia.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you.
We'll just play it.
Thank you.
Well, that was a recording by Lee Huan Chia, made in the late 1980s, called Time Toy No. 1 Symphony. For more information about Lee Huan Chia, go to LYC Foundation. And thanks to Paul Martin for bringing this unique recording in today. You've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM.